From the 89.1 WBOI studios in Fort Wayne, Indiana, this is WBOI Presents. I'm Ben Clemmer, producer and host of this program, and thank you for joining me. We've seen reports for years now about the decline of local news in America. Articles about the current state of local publications across the country often call it a national crisis, and one without an obvious solution. Why is this happening? What effect do corporate buyouts have on newspapers? We're about to hear an episode of All In from Indiana Public Broadcasting. Stay close. All In is a live statewide talk show about interesting things happening in Indiana, hosted by Miriam Sobe. You can hear the program on 89.1 WBOI on Fridays at 1 p.m. This hour will focus on a simple question without an easy answer. What's happening to local news? This show was originally produced on June 17th, and I will turn things over to the team from All In for the rest of this hour after a quick message. In short, support local news. Reporters, producers, and hosts bring you the voices from your community, a point that we reference every membership drive, and one that remains true every day. You can always give to WBOI online at WBOI.org by clicking the red Donate Now button. For the podcast version of this program, I left in place the intros and outros for breaks from the on-air version in an effort to leave as much of the show intact as possible. Please enjoy the show.
This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. Today we're talking about the current state of local news. Newspapers in particular have been on the decline for years in communities across the country. We'll talk to guests today about why it's happening and whether anything seems to be replacing the local coverage that's being lost. We're joined now by Bob Zaltzberg, special projects editor at WFIU WTIU News and former editor at the Herald Times newspaper in Bloomington. Welcome, Bob. I want to start with asking a little bit about your time at the Herald Times. How long were you there?
So I was the editor of the paper for 33 years. In full, I was there for 42 years, but I was the person running the news department for 33.
So you've seen a lot of changes then. You've seen, I guess, the way things were and the way things are now.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've seen a lot of change. You know, we could see that change was on the horizon a long time ago, even with, you know, with the advent of cable news networks and USA Today and a lot of things like that. But then the acceleration of that change with the digital transformation has been just astounding to watch. And it definitely put newspapers, print on paper, ink on paper, at a disadvantage. Mm-hmm. And then I don't think the industry really handled it all that well by really holding to the ink on paper model and the advertising driven model for as long as it did. And I'm not saying that I had any better idea, but I think that we held on a little too long.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of discussion about, you know, what should have happened and when. But I'm curious about, you know, there's a lot of corporate buyouts happening right now. When you were at the paper, who was the owner at the time?
So I worked for the Schurz family. It was Schurz Communications Incorporated, and I worked for them until the day I retired, which was January 31st, 2019. But on February 1st, 2019, the day after I retired, the Gatehouse Company took over the paper, and then Gatehouse and Gannett merged. Actually, one thing that a lot of people probably don't realize is that the Gatehouse Company and its hedge fund owners were kind of the company that took over Gannett, and Gannett is now a part of that company, and they took on the Gannett name. So Gannett now owns the Herald Times, as well as the Indianapolis Star and numerous other papers in Indiana and across the country.
Mm-hmm. Does that change the way news is covered? If one company is owning all of these newspapers, does it take away sort of the local flavor?
Well, it changed it dramatically in Bloomington. And, you know, things would not be any different if I was editor of the paper today under this ownership. Mm-hmm. But the ownership has changed things dramatically. It's reduced the number of journalists covering the community by a huge number. I think the day I left, I think there were still 29 local journalists working in reporting and layout and design, photography, those kinds of things. And I think, I don't have the exact number, but it's 10 or 11 that they have in that newsroom now. So that's a huge reduction. And that 29 was down from close to 50 at one point during my career. So that's been a huge change. The idea of printing the newspaper off site has been a huge change. It's changed the deadlines considerably. And then, you know, the point that you made about having a lot of the same ownership for a lot of newspapers, it just makes all the websites look the same. It makes all the newspapers look the same. But there are still local journalists in those communities. The few that are there are still trying to cover their local communities. And I would say doing a good job under some really difficult circumstances.
Right. It just seems like these newsrooms keep shrinking. I'm curious about, you know, working for a paper that is a family-owned newspaper versus being owned by a big corporation. Is there any difference, or would readers not even notice?
No, I think readers would notice a great deal. I mean, we were a family-owned newspaper, and a member of the family lived in Bloomington. It was a small family-owned paper, family-owned group, but there were a dozen or so newspapers, and you could get a hold of somebody with the last name of Schurz if you had a major issue. And the people who had the last name of Schurz knew the journalists who worked for them, and the journalists could always get to the ownership of the newspaper. Now there's so many different levels between the people who actually work in the newsroom and the people that are setting policy and running the news organization. I think it's a huge difference for how a local community gets covered.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder if it has anything to do with transparency. Does that affect it at all?
I don't know about the transparency issue. I don't think that the Gannett people, I'm not anti-Gannett. I'm not evil. I don't think Gannett is evil or anything. I don't think that they're dictating that local newspapers need to cover things in a particular way, or they need to take a particular editorial stance. I think the issue is more that they've just reduced the number of journalists. They've reduced the amount of things that people can cover. They've reduced budgets all around. And we used to be able to cover Indiana University Athletics in Bloomington, had a budget to do it, could go on the road with them, could do a lot of things and present news to our readers that was unique and unusual. That's not happening anymore. Since we were printed in the local community, we could get things into the newspaper on a timely basis. You know, the next day, that isn't happening anymore. There's not really much of a local editorial page anymore. You know, when I was there, and again, it's not about me, but when I was there, I was writing local editorials, doing commentary on local issues and running tons and tons of letters to the editor. There's an editorial page now that still has letters to the editor, but there's rarely a locally written position by the newspaper. So, you know, it just makes a big difference when there is a corporation that purchases it just because of the amount of resources that the local newspaper has offered to them. Because, of course, there has to be a certain level of profit made. And when you have a family-owned newspaper, of course they want to make a profit, but they're willing to take a lower level of profit. Mm-hmm. And it's not about serving their stockholders as much as it is, you know, serving family members and serving their communities and serving the people who work for them and working as a team and a partnership.
Well, when you look back at profit for the paper when you were working there, I mean, what was it like turning a profit then versus now? Was it easier or was it harder?
Well, I think there was a time when it was much easier, much, much easier. And, you know, I certainly shouldn't talk about profit margins and things of that nature, but profit margins were going down, you know, as I was there. So the amount of money that was being made, the percentage of money that was being made was certainly on the was trending downward. But we had a lot of very strong local advertisers. I think when with newspapers, and Jonas can probably talk about this, the second half of the program, newspapers used to own the real estate market. They used to own the automotive market. They used to have, you know, a lot of the big department stores in town. Well, you look around the community today, and there aren't big department stores. And the realtors do their own thing online, and the auto dealers are doing their own thing online. So those are huge segments of the revenue that just isn't going to newspapers anymore. So that made it really difficult to turn that profit, because of course profit is, you know, how much revenue you can bring in minus the expense that you put out. So if you're not bringing that much revenue in, you have to cut the expense to maintain the same level of profit. So the profits were definitely on the downswing when I was still there. But now I think the profits have probably gone back up, but at the detriment of the expenses that the newspapers were willing to put out.
Right. And I mean, you were there probably watching this transition from traditional to digital and all of that. I mean, what was that like? Was it fear of the unknown? Were people excited?
Well, I look back on it and I think we were really proud at how aggressive we thought we were in going into the digital market. And we were one of the first newspapers in the country that actually charged for digital content. I look back on it now and I think, yeah, we did a pretty good job relative to other newspapers. But relative to other newspapers was still not a very good job of making this transition. So, you know, we were making a little bit of money on the digital side, but not nearly enough to, we were still betting on the fact that print was going to still be there and all that revenue that was coming into print was still going to stay strong. And I don't think we really anticipated well enough anyway, just the total transition to a more digital style of presenting news and information.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder how tough it is, you know, in general for newspapers with so many outlets popping up left and right. It's like anybody can just start something up.
That's absolutely true. And I think that, I think that that's what I would call news literacy is such an important thing these days, because I do think that the local journalists in the newspapers around the state of Indiana and around the nation, they're still doing their best to present fair and honest coverage of their communities, but there just aren't enough of them. And so these other news outlets that are popping up, some of them are doing a great job. You know, I think about Chalkbeat as a nonprofit news organization. It's doing a great job on education. But, you know, in a local community, we've got three or four different sort of one-man bands out there doing their thing, and they're doing it reasonably well, but in a very narrow niche. You know, one guy's covering a lot of local government, doing a pretty good job. One person's covering a lot of cops and nighttime news and trauma, and he's doing a good job. But nobody's covering, you know, that entire range of the community the way the local newspaper used to.
Right. And so probably for audiences, if you're just focusing one thing, you're not getting a broader picture that you would if you opened up a paper.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I do have to mention the fact that I think that public radio is filling some of this niche by increasing the staff in local communities to try to fill some of that void that is being left behind by local newspapers. And I think that's a positive. I think nonprofit news is going to be something we're going to have to look at, you know, in the future.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have about 30 seconds here. How has the paper changed since you retired? Have you seen anything else change?
Oh, yeah. I mean, a lot of things have changed. I mean, the entire design of the paper is different. It looks exactly like the Indianapolis Star and other Gannett papers now. The deadlines have changed, so nothing gets in the next day. A lot of features have disappeared from the paper. The editor, news director is what she's called, wrote a column the other day saying they were not going to be accepting nearly as much submitted news, which is a lot of that chicken dinner refrigerator. You know, it's not the biggest news in town, but it's stuff that gets people reading the paper and people want to look at. They're not going to be taking much of that anymore. And so there are just numerous ways that it's changed.
All right. Well, we'll touch more on that after a quick break. We're talking about the current state of local news in Indiana. If you have any questions or comments for the show, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam Sobel. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. We're talking today about local news. Newspapers and communities across the country have been on the decline for years, and there's a growing anxiety around whether anything is replacing some of the local coverage that came from those newsrooms. We'd love your questions and comments on the topic. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. You can also send us a voice message through our free smartphone app. It's called All In Vox Pop. Just search for All In Vox Pop on your phone's app store. Send us your question or comment, and we'll try to get it into the show. We're joined again by Bob Salzberg, special projects editor at WFIU-WTIU News and former editor at the Herald Times newspaper in Bloomington. And with us now is Jonas Bjork, professor in the Department of Journalism and Public Relations at IUPUI. Jonas, I'll start with you. Why are we seeing a decline in local newspapers across the country? Is there something that spurred all of this?
Well, I think Bob already touched on this, that the transition to online or digital delivery of information and news is behind that. And with that, of course, also came, as Bob also touched on, this moving advertising also online for cars and real estate. And the fact that we're not buying at department stores anymore, but we're buying online. So they're part of a sort of broader trend of our digitized society, I guess you could call it.
So would you say it's fair to say that the digital world is killing newspapers? I remember that was like a fear when things were first popping up and people were getting more online. And is that what's happening?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's also part of a much longer trend. I've been teaching journalism for a number of years, and we've been talking about how for a long time now, papers have had difficulty attracting younger readers. So they're, even before we had this digital shift, readers were graying. The average age of readers tended to go up.
Well, Bob, what are your thoughts? I mean, are newspapers dead?
Yeah, no, I don't think they're dead, but I think that what Professor Bjork says is definitely true. I think the issue is we need to meet readers where they are, and I think that was one of the things that we didn't recognize early enough. We gave it a lot of lip service. We talked about how readers are going online, they're going onto their mobile devices, and that's where they're getting news and information. So we have to figure out a way to be there and to have our news and information there too, and somehow to make it of enough value that people were going to somehow we were going to be able to pay for it. I think that the death of maybe the print newspaper is imminent. That is that ink on paper thing that's delivered to your house. But if newsrooms can continue in that local newspaper office or digitally in a mobile setting or whatever, if they can continue to put together enough local journalists that can cover a community, I think that news operation can continue to thrive. I think news, you know, news is still of value, but I don't know that the paper itself has of much value.
Right. Well, maybe we'll save some trees.
Well, maybe. Although, you know, they were kind of a cash crop. You know, they were all planted specifically to be used for newspapers, but you know, I get your point. Absolutely.
Right. And Jonas, what are your thoughts?
No, I agree with Bob. I think news has to be there. It's essential for communities to function, to have information. And we've kind of been through something similar in the past. I'm not sure everybody remembers the great weekly photo magazines, Life and Look, that brought you visual images, great photo reporting, but were killed off by television because television was a more effective way of reaching for advertisers to reach consumers. So they went by the wayside. But photojournalism, of course, survived.
Yeah, if I could add to that, I mean, it's the point I would make is that we used to sort of talk about ourselves as being the Daily Miracle. You know, we produce a newspaper every 24 hours and it was a big task. Well, 24 hours is a long time. You can have several news cycles, you know, 100 news cycles in 24 hours. And so that 24 hours, it's like Jonas talks about the life and look, that was a 7-day news cycle for those magazines. So newspapers are a 24-hour news cycle, and people want an immediate news cycle. They want to know immediately what's going on. That's why Twitter is such an important part of news coverage today. It's not Twitter isn't producing any news, but they're gathering news from, I mean, everybody's got a Twitter feed and they're putting their news up. That's where news is breaking these days. Mm-hmm. So it's just it's a difference in the technology, and it's pushed print out. But the people that have been doing print, if they can figure out ways to continue to do that good coverage, they won't be left. They won't be dead. They'll just be reincarnated into something else.
Right. Well, Jonas, when it comes to ad revenue for papers and sort of the negative impact that online alternatives had, do you think newspapers were responding in the right way, or they could have done better?
Well, just with ad revenue, I'm not quite sure what they could have done differently. Obviously, it was a very profitable model where advertising subsidized or brought in most revenue. I'm not sure any of us perhaps would have foreseen the kind of customization that online ads allow you. In the old days, you wanted a car, you looked in the paper, and then you tried to figure out if a dealer had something like that. Today, you go on and you specify make, color, mileage, price, mm-hmm. and some website spits that out for you. I'm not quite sure we were able to foresee the impact of that. Classified ads and everything that we used to go to the newspaper for. It's all done differently now, and in some ways in a more convenient way for consumers or readers.
Yeah. I'm thinking of places like Craigslist that you could go and get things. It's like, why would you pay for a paper if you could just go online for free?
Yeah. That's the other aspect of it. Even though, of course, you never paid very much for what you got.
Right.
News
right.
of your community and advertising information. But if it's free on the web, and I think that was another issue that perhaps papers could have dealt with differently, but I'm not sure anybody had a crystal ball. I think in the beginning, there was a tendency to say, okay, we have this content in the print issue, we'll just put it up online as a courtesy mm-hmm. and not charge for it. And of course, I think that a lot of people got used to or thinking that, oh yeah, this stuff is free. I can go online and get the latest news and I shouldn't have to pay anything for it.
That was another key area that was important. People did begin to think that, you know, how dare you charge me for this information? And it's like, well, you know, we've been charging you for it in a different form. We've got all these journalists running around that have to get a paycheck. We're gathering information. This is what we do. This is our product. And we need to charge you something for this product. That was our thought in having a monthly charge for our online stuff. And I can't begin to tell you how many readers would yell at me about, you know, the New York Times doesn't charge for this, or the Indy Star doesn't charge for this. Well, of course they do now, but mm-hmm. at that time they didn't, but we did. Cause we just said, you know, this content's valuable to you. If it's so valuable to you that you're calling to yell at me, you should maybe examine, you know, the value proposition here. But that was a hard sell because there was so much out there that was free.
Wow. So the Herald Times was putting up a paywall before it was a trend.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We were putting up a paywall in about the year 2000 or 2001. And we got a lot of grief for it. But we were able to, you know, to bring in, I don't know, $300,000 a year in revenue from the people that were paying for it at the time. And that could fund a few journalists. So that, but it still wasn't, you know, we got a lot of grief for it, and it wasn't the magic bullet that we needed to be able to survive long term.
Right. Well, Jonas, when paywalls were introduced, what effect did that have for local newspapers?
Well, I think one of the problems is, of course, I mean, when you go online, period, we've never figured out, I think, how to make the advertising work as well as it did in the old print model. And I think, again, I think there was a fair amount of resistance to paywalls, but as Bob said, New York Times has it now, the Indianapolis Star has it now. And I think people are getting used to it. I don't know how many people are turned off by it and saying, okay, if I have to pay for this, I am not going to do that. I'm going to skip reading the news then.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'll say from my experience when I encounter paywalls, I think if I just knew ahead of time, like I can't log in at all until I pay, I'll probably buy the membership. But when you tease me with a couple of articles, I feel a little bit frustrated. I'm like, hey, I want to read that one.
Yeah, absolutely. We frustrate a lot of people in a lot of ways, I have to say.
No, but, I agree with that, too. On social media, somebody sends you a link, and you want to say, okay, I want to see what it is, and there's the paywall. Mm-hmm. I agree with you that it seems to be the Matisse, perhaps.
Yeah. I mean, I just wonder if it could be, you know, I mean, if we're paying for our music subscriptions or Netflix or whatever, like, I'm sure we can pay for a subscription to news.
Yeah, I would like to think so, yes. But, you know, what's happening now, you may want to go in a different direction, but I just want to talk a little bit about this content that's being lost, because these local newspapers that are going away or that are laying off journalists right and left, a lot of them are still producing great news, but there's so little of it. They can't cover, there are not as many state house reporters, there are not as many people covering city councils, there are not as many people covering the county commissioners and the school boards. And I think this is a great loss to communities. So that you still get great journalism. I mean, the Indy Star just won a Pulitzer Prize, and they do great work in Indianapolis as a newspaper staff, but they've made the choice that they're going to cover things in depth. And there are a lot of things they used to cover that just don't get covered anymore. So it's a different ballgame.
Yeah, and I think that's extremely important. I ran across some data that says that if you look at the kind of the amount of news that's produced, newspapers, at least in their heyday, but I still think so, produced most of that compared, for instance, to television, commercial television newscasts. And they produce this, or they cover the things that aren't necessarily extremely exciting, but extremely essential and useful. All the stuff that Bob talked about, committee meetings, city council meetings, all that stuff that citizens need to know falls by the wayside. You may have people still covering it, but not to the extent that it was done in the past.
Right. And I think maybe it gets overlooked that, you know, something local is actually very important in the grand scheme of things versus some of the national stories that we tend to see a lot of.
Well, I think the point I would make about that is, you know, if there's a new ordinance as there is in Bloomington that essentially does away with single family zoning, which means that, you know, now in your neighborhood in the middle of Bloomington, somebody can put up a duplex or a triplex or a quadplex right next to you. You need to know about that, and you need to be able to weigh in with government about that. Those are the kind of stories that generally, you know, you're not going to be getting on with your New York Times subscription or listening to on NPR, although, you know, local NPR stations can cover those issues too and do cover them well. But those are the kind of issues that really hit home with people about what they can do with their own property, what their own kids are going to learn in their school, whether they're going to be able to go back in person or have to stay and teach online. Those are a lot of really important stories, and there just aren't enough reporters covering them now.
Right. Yes. Go ahead.
No, Steve Key of the Hoosier State Press Association had a great column back in February where he talked about this small town where they were going to raise utility rates. And there was an enormous protest, but it was fueled by people getting information from one another on social media. And it also fueled this sort of conspiracy thinking theory that the town was out to get you. It was covered by the local newspaper, but only about half the people in the community actually subscribed to the paper. So in the absence of somebody who goes there and is trained to cover government meetings, you have this brew of rumors and innuendo and theories about what's going on that isn't really news. And it doesn't really further local government or local democracy.
Mm-hmm. Well, does the sort of dying off of traditional newspapers, does that sort of affect the idea of a community? For example, I'm just thinking about like letters to the editor. Well, now you have comment sections online. Does that kill that sort of natural community?
I don't, you know, you the word kill you've used a couple of times. I think it can
eliminate, disappear.
It can mitigate, it can water down. You know, you can build communities in a lot of ways, I think, but I do believe that the local newspaper was a strong asset in building communities. It gave people a sense of what was important. Now, not always did we, you know, that was giving us a lot of credit and a lot of power to say these are the important issues, or these are the ones that we think the most people should be interested in. And we could do an entire program on whether we were right or wrong about that. But it mm-hmm. still gave people sort of a common language and a common set of issues to look at. And the best newspapers would be very careful in saying, you know, homelessness is an issue we all need to be paying attention to. Or, you know, our public schools are failing in one way or another. And so people had a common set of issues and a common language and a common way to look at problems facing their communities. And I think, you know, it's not dead, but it's not as prevalent because newspapers aren't as strong as they were. There's still other outlets that are providing some of that through, I would say, public radio or through some of these different news sites or through some nonprofits. But the local newspaper certainly did a lot of that before.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that. I think the idea that we had a common set of issues that we could have different viewpoints about or different solutions proposed. One of the things I think that the digitized world has done is to give a separate set of facts. So we can't even argue very well because we don't believe the same thing. So we think realities are totally different.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank you both for joining us today. It's been a pleasure having this conversation. I know we could probably talk about so much more, so I definitely hope we can bring you back on again. Bob Zaltzberg, Special Projects Editor at WFIU WTIU News and former editor at the Herald Times newspaper in Bloomington. And Jonas Bjork, Professor in the Department of Journalism and Public Relations at IUPUI. We'll be back after a quick break. We're talking about the decline of local news coverage in Indiana and across the country. I'm Miriam Sobe. We'll be back. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. Back now to our discussion on the current state of local news in Indiana and across the country. We're joined now by Joshua Dar, Assistant Professor of Political Communication at Louisiana State University. Thank you for joining us, Joshua. You wrote a piece about the decline of local news for 538 earlier this month, and the first line reads, "The laws of supply and demand aren't working for local news." Can you explain what that means?
Sure. So glad to be here. The local news business right now is not necessarily suffering from a lack of audience demand, especially during the COVID-19 pandemic. All of a sudden, it became extremely important to know what was going on in your community, and people turned to their local news first during those first months of COVID. But at the same time, advertiser money dropped out. And so the problem with that is that it's not that, you know, audiences turning to them didn't work in the same way that, it's not like that came with more money. As advertisers pulled out, they had to lay people off, they closed, and hedge funds and other sources bought more newspapers to gut them.
Mm-hmm. Now, when it comes to just talking about sort of the profit and not being able to profit during the pandemic, I guess it's kind of confusing for folks because more people seem to be tuning into news for the first time in a long time because of what was going on, but newspapers were still not able to turn a profit.
That is confusing. And like I put it, the laws of supply and demand are not totally working in that case. But most people don't know that local news is in crisis at all. So there's confusion about that in general. I would say people are reading local news content online and perhaps seeing digital ads and seeing that, well, if they're selling digital ads, maybe they're doing okay, but digital ads don't bring in nearly the amount of money that print ads did. And that's a real problem because we're losing print circulation and digital's first is becoming the way that this goes. And so if people don't know that there's a problem, if they're not subscribing either because they can get around the paywall or they don't read enough articles to hit the paywall, or they turn to a different news source when they do hit a paywall, then maybe they experience local news online as annoying in some ways and not necessarily as something worth paying for. And there's obviously things local news can do to get around that, but they're still in some ways trying to figure out what those things are.
Well, when it comes to paywall, I mean, it's interesting that you're bringing that up. I'm just thinking about myself when I go and look at articles, and if I hit a paywall, it's like, do I pay? Do I go somewhere else? What would you say that these newspapers were slow to adapt? Like if they had started off being online and being a paid model, it would have been better for them?
I think so. There was a lot of money in local news in the 90s, in the early 2000s, and sort of the early days of mainstream broadband internet. And they didn't charge people at first. And it sort of set them down a path where now people are almost annoyed that they might have to pay for it and willing to turn to other sources that don't have the resources, the history, the cachet that a local newspaper with an established presence in that community might have. You know, I almost liken it to Blockbuster Video. You make one wrong move at the wrong time and it sets you down the wrong path.
Right. Yeah, I just wonder also if there's a messaging that could be done differently to get folks to say like, okay, we're going to pay. Like maybe I'm not getting the paper at my door and it's online, but it's still worth paying for.
Yeah, I think convincing people that it's worth paying for is a huge part of it. And there are models, newsletter models, Substack is really trying to move into this space of local news. And there's no shortage of laid off local reporters that might be interested in starting a Substack. So there's a supply of writers and they have a business model that seems to work for them. But there has to be some sort of innovation if it's not a bundle of news that arrives at your doorstep where you're not necessarily signing up for political news. Maybe you want human interest in arts and culture and sports and comics and crossword puzzles, I would add, are a pretty important part of that. Maybe you want all that and you get political news as part of it. If you don't get that bundle anymore, you can start to piece those things out and you don't get the sort of spillover benefits of chance encounters of political news. You get moved out of that routine of this is the time of day when I consume my news. And so local news sources need to figure out how to recapture those things, whether it's by bundling content together in a more effective way, having it arrive in people's inboxes in a more engaging way. There's a lot of smart people trying to figure this out. But unless they do so quickly, the clock is ticking.
Mm-hmm. And what would be a more reliable business model for ad revenue for newspapers, do you think?
This is a really thorny question. I think this is the question, really, because ultimately newspapers for most of their history have been supported by advertisers. They're not being supported by reader subscriptions only. Now that's changing a bit, especially with the big national brand name newspapers. Like the New York Times can get away with a subscription-based income model. And they increasingly are. I believe recently they've started making more money from subscriptions than from advertisers. But a local newspaper can't do that. A local newspaper has been a great for civics and great for democracy in all the ways that I describe in my article. But it's also been really good for local businesses because it's a way to reach local customers in a personalized way where they can literally clip the coupon out and bring it to your store or whatever it is, you know, look and then go. It's all very local. Now, what's happened recently is that those advertising dollars have been swept up by Facebook and Google. If they're online and you encounter a local news article online, like through Google News, Google News is taking the advertising money that's happening there. It's not going to the local newspaper. And so there, some of the policy solutions to this that are being debated in Washington are trying to figure out how local news companies can collectively bargain with those tech companies like Facebook and Google to get some of that ad revenue back. Because print revenue went away, and if they're not making money off of online ads, if those are going to, you know, multi-billion-dollar tech companies instead of to local newspapers, then there's just no money. And right. If there's no money, there's no newspapers.
Right. That's a very complex problem to be in. Are there any consequences that you've seen in the decline of business in the last year so far?
So the last year specifically is just I think we're still in the midst of it in some ways. There's been so many layoffs, so many people taking buyouts, and then those positions were not, once you take a buyout, that position tends not to be filled again. The 538 article I wrote was about our book, which was about an experiment in local news at a newspaper in California, where they dropped all national content from their opinion page for a month. And we found, more focus on local issues, less polarization relative to other communities that we measured, lots of good effects of that, but it took a lot of effort. It took a dedicated opinion editor. And within the last year, that opinion editor took the buyout that was offered to him by Gannett. So they were without an opinion editor for a while. Actually, the community banded together to raise money to hire another one. But those kind of stories are playing out everywhere. And if you don't have the people in place to do the effort to make the paper local, then you end up with a newspaper that is a sort of a pale reflection of itself. And why would people go to a place that just sort of aggregates wire content and national opinion content? They can do that online.
Right.
So if the newspaper is less local, it's going to be less worth paying for. They're going to be able to pay for fewer employees, and it's a downward spiral.
Right, right. And I've seen some of those sites where you think you're getting local news and then it's just an aggregation. And you're like, is a robot writing this?
Ghost newspapers. That's what we call those.
Right. Well, I'm curious, you're talking about this stuff that you covered, but have there been any other success stories of local newspapers that were able to find a new business model that worked?
I think that there's been some success with these newsletter products. I don't know if that's exactly local newspapers, but there have been some successes with that. I know Axios is a national company, but they've been starting a local newsletter-based local news program in a lot of different cities. Mm-hmm. And while that might not be helping local newspapers in the traditional sense right now, I think the more that these sort of startups and innovators can show a path forward, the more that those local newspapers can adopt those tactics and try to do that themselves. It may take an outsider, almost back to the Blockbuster example, it may take a Netflix coming in and saying there's another way to do this. And Blockbuster missed their chance to buy Netflix. They had one and they missed it. But, maybe it's not too late for some of these more established local brands to adopt some of the innovators' tactics, some of their, what's now their competition, they might be able to do that. So not necessarily with local newspapers, because the purchase of them by hedge funds, the layoffs, all that continues apace. But there is a lot of innovation happening, and that does leave me hopeful.
Well, when it comes to these hedge funds, what is the benefit for them to buy up these newspapers?
So they're buying they're buying a brand name, right? They're buying, local newspapers, their purpose in a lot of ways is to build an emotional connection with the community. That's what's valuable to them for advertisers, is that, my ad is coming in the context of this newspaper that is something that you love and subscribe to and read and connects you to your community. So hedge funds, when they come in, they're getting that, and then they're basically banking that will carry them through. And so they can, as long as they have that brand name and that loyal subscriber base, they can continue to make money off of the name while they lay off half the reporters and sell the headquarters so that there's no central office space in the community anymore for the newspaper, and cut salaries and force furloughs. You know, they can basically do the hedge fund thing of chopping a company down to the studs while leveraging the debt from it and banking that the brand name will keep subscriber money and advertiser money coming in. And, you know, people don't like that kind of local news. It's not as local as it was. So as the old subscriber base fades away, they're not attracting new ones, but it's a short-term play for the hedge funds. It's a long-term play for the local newspapers, but if their ownership group wants to do something, there's not a lot they can do. So it's a tricky situation because more than half of the newspaper readership today reads a newspaper owned by a hedge fund.
Wow.
It's been a pretty thorough takeover.
Wow, that's really interesting. I didn't even realize that. Well, when we talk about the decline in local news, you know, people will say, well, is this a new phenomenon? Is this something that we see? Is it cyclical? Like, for example, when 24-hour news came out, did we see a decline in newspapers? Is that what's going on here with the internet?
So local, the story of local news is cyclical in a lot of ways. I mean, you know, we had the partisan press in the 1800s. We had sort of these yellow journalism penny papers in the early 1900s. We had this era of three network broadcast news in the mid 20th century. But the 90s were a very heady time for local news. There was sort of a move away from the partisan press that was complete at that point. There were sort of a deregulation of the media industry allowed this a lot of newspapers to start being bought up by chains. So it's definitely declined from then. It may have been artificially high at that point due to the regulatory environment. And who the ownership was allowed to be. But falling from those heights were a very low period for local news. And I would add, and this is sort of what my research focuses on, it's never been easier to get national news. That's the difference, is that you can get national news really easily online. You can subscribe to any number of big name national newspapers and get a steady diet of some of the highest quality national reporting we've ever had. But we have less local at the same time. So this is sort of what my research focuses on, is that that's leading to this nationalization of politics that emphasizes party identity and de-emphasizes local identity, which was something that was cultivated deliberately by local newspapers, as I've said, to sell ads and to sell subscriptions. As that goes away, people need something to cling on to, and they're finding national politics news is readily available, and they can define them, their identities, through national politics.
That's a really good point, because I have noticed when I try to research local stories, it's a lot harder. Like, I can find any other story under the sun, international, national, but it's like the more local you get, the harder it is to find anything. And I've wondered, is that because newsrooms are shrinking, or is it just that, I don't know, they don't have the resources or the focus?
Yeah, I think it's good to look at this as two sides of the same coin, right? Which is that, like I said, the national newspapers can survive on a subscription model in a way that local newspapers can't. They just don't have the number of subscribers that they would need, because their area of circulation is limited geographically and who's interested in it, in a way that the New York Times is not, right? And so the distribution model of online news is much more conducive to big national brands, whereas local brands can't really do it, especially if their advertising money is getting stolen by Google and Facebook. If that's the way people are encountering news, then local newspapers are in deep trouble. So there has to be some other, because people do in the end still want local information. They need it. They want to know what's going on in their communities. And they're turning to less official sources, right? These Facebook groups, Nextdoor, and a lot of these, like Nextdoor, explicitly bans political content. So people aren't getting politics in these hyper-local social networks. And they're not getting as much politics from local news that's not providing it. They're getting all their politics from national. So, you know, this was in this 2020 election, there was the highest correlation ever between House vote and presidential vote. How you feel about the president is how you feel about everything all the way down. County comptroller local sheriff, local representative, mayor, city councilor, they're dealing with a lot of things that the president doesn't. Mm-hmm, those are right. Very different things. And so if you're using a how do I feel about the president shortcut to define all your political choices, some stuff's going to fall through the cracks.
Right, right. Well, we're getting ready to wrap up. We have about a minute left. What would you say makes you hopeful about the future of local news? Is there anything to be hopeful about?
I think so. I think people do want this. I think the market will figure it out. I'm encouraged by the amount of philanthropy that's in this space. There's a lot of organizations that really want to solve this question. I'm encouraged by the results of our book, which showed a decrease in polarization relative to another community when a local newspaper was able to focus on local content. So if we can figure this out, if we can get people news that focuses on their community, amplifies community voices instead of just national partisan conflict, the research shows that there's good positive effects from it. There's a lot of benefits of local news, and we can focus on how bad things get when it goes away, or we can focus on how good things are when it's here. And if we can figure out the economics of it, the better politics of it will follow.
All right. Well, I want to thank you so much, Joshua Darr, for joining us, Assistant Professor of Political Communication at Louisiana State University. Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Micah Yason. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme song. If you'd like a podcast of this show or any past show, you can find it anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm Miriam Sobe. Thanks for listening. This is All In.
This has been an episode of WBOI Presents. Special thanks to Indiana Public Broadcasting for providing the audio for this program. Our music is by Mark Waldick, Noah Campodonico, Kurt Remke, and Hope Arthur. Our web producer is Loyal Vandenberg. Our production assistants are Alex Costanzo, Steve Mullaney, and Sydney Wagner. Until next time, thank you for listening. From WBOI Fort Wayne.